This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio with me, Paul Andrews, and my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Serkin.
Well, you've caught me mid-biscuit, Paul.
She's eating a shortbread biscuit.
Who can resist a shortbread?
Well, you shouldn't be eating them, young lady.
I know. I shouldn't. We won't tell anyone. Had a tweet, she said, changing the
subject quickly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. DG East 1. You can find them on the Twitter.
Right.
And they say, hi, Jules and Paul. How about, notice they put me first there, Paul Andrews.
Yeah, I did notice that. I'm not happy about that.
Who can blame them? How about a shout out for a business fighting the greed of regulators? When will the FCA be reported in the press?
Mm.
Now, there's a show. There's a whole show there, Paul.
It's frightening, isn't it? How all of a sudden everybody... I'll
put my biscuit down now.
I'm going to have a micro rant.
Okay.
And this organisation isn't my favourite organisation normally, but I'm going to give them a little bit of praise and then I'm going to kick their head in. Yeah. My house in the middle of nowhere, for some bizarre reason, on the Monday after a mega storm, I became one of the first people to be swapped by British Telecom to the new digital voice services.
Yeah.
So they've done away with my landline and I have to plug my phone into broadband.
I don't know about this.
Yeah.
So hang on, you're going to have a digital, no landline?
There's no, they've done, all landlines will disappear by 2030. There will not be any landlines anywhere.
What happens when the Wi-Fi goes down? Which
you haven't got a phone. Well, let me tell you my story and then you'll know, won't you?
Okay. Yeah, no, tell me.
Okay, so every phone in the United Kingdom will be a digital phone by 2030.
Crazy.
Mine is already. And basically, you have to plug it into your broadband router. Monday morning, I get a text from BT saying, you're being swapped this morning. Would you like to plug your phone into your broadband router? Okay. And it says, here's a fact about what's going on. So I read the whole thing. And the first question it says is, will I be charged more for this? And will it change my contract? And it said, no, there'll be no extra charges for this. And there's no changes to your contract. Okay. So I swapped it over and it didn't work. Okay. I spent a couple of hours on the phone. And to be fair, I spoke to some lovely folks in Dublin. Why they were in Dublin, I don't know. But the tech support team for this were in Dublin. And they eventually sorted it out. But there was a lot of, oh, I don't know why that's happening. Oh, I'm not sure why that's doing that.
To be sure now.
Yeah. Well, there was some of that as well.
Yeah.
But to be fair, the lovely Cleo, Siobhan and Dennis sorted my problem out. So thank you very much, folks. That was brilliant.
There must have been a nymph there or something.
Yeah.
Because they have strange spellings.
2 hours later, I get an email from BT. Just to notify you of the changes to your contract and the price rises.
No! Oh, bad as a smart meter.
Yeah, you people, eh? People.
You've really put the breeze up me because we know that in future there will be broadband cuts. We know, we're not stupid. We know there'll be Wi-Fi's down. You know what happens at home if your Wi-Fi's down for 10 minutes? It's panic, isn't it?
Would you like to know what the official stance on that is?
What?
Once your phone isn't connected to your broadband, if you lose power, then it won't work. And it won't even make emergency calls. So what BT recommend is you have a mobile phone. Now, the fact is, once we've gone this route, what's the point in having a landline?
There isn't one.
There is no point. You might just as well just have a mobile.
Can you cancel it and get rid of it?
Funnily enough.
I think this is another show.
It's a special thing you have to do. If you want to not have a landline, you have to get a different broadband package.
Oh, I see what they did there.
See what they did there. You're not going to get away with paying any less. You're still going to pay through the nose for this, even though you don't want to use it.
I've noticed a lot of Truly vans around where we live.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And I've noticed a lot of 5G masks going up, and they look very sinister. Great big black things they are.
What colour do you want them then?
I think they look very sinister.
5G's fine. Yeah, tinfoil hat.
Yeah, depends how much vaccine you've got in your throat.
There's nothing wrong. People talk utter nonsense about microwaves.
I'd like to go back to the old days when you had a GPO telephonist, if I've got a landline.
Who could listen into your calls?
Yeah.
Going, oh, dearie, you don't want to tell that.
Do you know, I'm so old that that was the job to have when you left school. That was my one choice, you know, when they had the careers lady came round and she said, the best job for you, Jules, would be a GPO telephonist. Because if you did that and you had that training, you could do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing, really.
Yeah.
Putting you through now.
You could have been a telex operator.
Yeah. So you're not enamoured?
Well, it's working now. No, is it?
And your bill's gone up?
And my bill's gone up, even though they said it wouldn't, for a completely different reason. Yeah, they haven't charged me more for the voice thing. They just charged me more for everything else. But my problem with this is, and I'm talking to the chaps, when my phone didn't work, I said, why have you moved me before anybody else? We're upgrading the entire network to fibre. Yeah, but I will be the last. You won't change me to fibre until 2293. Mm. Yeah, because my house has a mouldy old piece of 70-year-old copper from a telegraph pole that comes into my house. Mm. You ain't going to change that for fibre anytime soon, because my house is the only house there. It's not worth your while.
I mean, I'm actually kind of now wanting to get rid of my smart meter. I've put it in the garage.
Should never have had a smart meter.
I know. Well, you tell me that now. So he put it in the kitchen. I wasn't having it in the kitchen. So I've put it in our garage, which is quite a long way away, and it's 9-foot wall and stuff. But now I'm wondering, can I just dismantle it and put it in the garden or something?
Well, you've got to be careful. See, in France, smart meters are a legal requirement, as they are in most of the European Union.
In France,
there's only one little minor drawback.
What?
They don't work.
No.
In 90% of the country, they don't work because they're out of range of any kind of communication to actually use them. So everybody had to pay to have these smart meters put in, but they don't actually work.
In France or anywhere?
Or anywhere. Yeah, well, yeah. You know, because the whole idea behind a smart meter
is surveillance, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you communicate with it, yeah, via a microwave or a Wi-Fi type signal.
Yeah.
But most people don't live anywhere near where you could get a signal to it. You know, if you live in a city, fine.
Yeah.
Anywhere outside of a city, ain't going to work. And, you know, they're dodgy anyway.
I was just thinking about Jill going back to Produced in Kent. I was in Greenwich on Sunday and I went to a lovely pub. It was Davies Wine Vault, I think it was called. It's an indie. Independent, and on the menu, Kentish lamb.
Oh, lovely.
Which is, you know, isn't that lovely to be going somewhere and you get the old Kent food, not just the wines and the beers.
Is that Romney Marsh lamb?
Romney Marsh lamb.
Salt marshes.
Salt marshes, yeah, lovely. Oh, lovely. Yeah. Of course, they want to put a solar farm all over that, so we're going to lose quite a lot of them.
There is a move, actually, to build an SMR at Dungeness on the site of the nuclear power station, which is a good move.
Yeah. So you can't walk your dog near wildlife, but you can build a nuclear power station or solar factories.
Hopefully. Well, a nuclear power station is far better than a solar plant.
Yeah. Oh, solar factories are ridiculous.
They take up too much land. Yeah.
Of course they do. They should go on buildings.
Yeah. 1,000% more electricity from a much smaller space from an SMR, small modular reactor.
Yeah, but there's people making lots of money out of building solar factories. Twitter's going mad. I'm just going to try and my phone's locked.
Okay, well, while you're doing that, I'm going to play the interview that we've got with the lovely Cheney Hamilton and Barbara Ford.
Oh, I'd love to hear what they're doing with their flexi working, isn't it?
They're talking about flexi working and all things to do with flexi work.
And what's their Twitter handle?
At
flexi something.
I'll tell you their Twitter handle in one second.
It's find your flex with an underscore. Find your underscore flex.
Yeah,
and
it's
Cheney and Barbara.
Yeah. So let's hear what they had to say, shall we?
Let's.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show for the very first time, Cheney Hamilton and Barbara Ford of Find Your Flex. Ladies, good afternoon. Welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to meet you.
You too, Paul. Thank you for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure. No, it's an absolute pleasure, ladies. Thanks for agreeing to come on. Now, you guys are working in a field that is really top of the agenda at the moment, which is how we go about our working practices. So start off by just telling us, giving us an overview of Find Your Flex. What's it all about?
So we've been around since 2017, so pre-pandemic, always advocating for flexible working. It's been a journey, and it's been a huge learning curve in terms of not only what finding out what people want and how people want to work, but also in terms of speaking to and listening to businesses and understanding what they need and the and certainly the education that they need to allow themselves to offer more flexibility to workers. It's become a bit of a, it's a labor of love for me. It's a total passion project because for me with Find Your Flex and findyourflex.business, it's become about future of work. It's become about how do we leave behind a better working world for my children, for all of our children. You know, and it impacts right across the diversity, equity, equality and inclusion spectrum. Flexible working, you know, it is and it should be and it can be all about how do we create fair access to work. So that's not just about a mum who needs to work part-time. It's about somebody who is disabled being able to work for a high-flying business organisation without actually physically going into the office. It's about how do we move to outcome-based working, which means we can get rid of time-based working contracts. It's there's a lot of stuff going on. There's the temperature of the room at the minute in the UK is to move to outcome-based working, and so our kind of challenge certainly over the last 6 months has been how do we stop businesses going down the route of one size fits all, like hybrid working or like 4-day week, and actually encourage them to look at broader solutions in terms of how we work, how we build and design our contracts, and have that proper work-life balance, not you know, living to work.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking to Barbara a few days ago when we were setting up this interview, and I was saying that 20 years ago I introduced in my own business outcome-based stuff, but it was really quite interesting because I think this is something that we have to think about as well. People said to me, well, what are the hours of work? I don't care what hours you do. I just want you to do what you do, you know, just do the work. I don't care if you do it at 3 o'clock in the morning, or really, you know, as long as you do it. And if you've done it in an hour, you go home. I mean, it doesn't bother me.
It's a deliverable, isn't it? It's not about the journey.
But the funny thing was, all my stuff went, and then they all turned up at 8:30 and went home at 5. You know, it's because we get these things that into this rut of how we do things, don't we? And one of the things I really liked about what you just said as well, Chaney, is that it's not an alternative one size thing. Yeah, because that's the danger with everything we do, isn't it? It becomes a meme, and then everybody jumps on a bandwagon, like, you know, remote working, and says, right, we're going to have remote working, or we're going to have hybrid working, and then it just becomes another thing. And that's not flexible, is it? It's just an alternative.
It's prescribed hours at the end of the day. As soon as it's written down, and that's what you've agreed to, like, what to you is flexible about somebody working 10 till 2, 5 days a week? Where's the flexibility in that?
Yeah, exactly. It's just from an employer's point of view, I guess the scary thing here is it has to be managed. And you have to put resources into how you manage your workforce. But the upside for employers, for me, is we have a massive talent shortage in the UK. We have 1.2 million unfilled jobs, and we have a lot of people that would like to work but can't because, you know, it's not set up correctly. And that for me is why it's desperate that we have flexible working, because we're excluding a number of people from the workforce with talent because you know, they can't work the hours that we want them to work, you know, for due to childcare or you know, disability care or disabilities. I do a lot of work in the southeast here with finding people with supported needs jobs, so I fully understand how difficult that can be, and why it needs a degree of flexibility. Okay, so we're kind of all singing from the same hymn sheet, which is nice. How do we make this happen? What is it that you guys are doing? How are you trying to bring this to the attention of employers? You know, what's the thing that is kind of driving you forward at the moment?
I think understanding that it's not going to be the same solution for every business is different and they should be different, but I think we need to start thinking about a lot of highlighting the many different ways that it can be managed, because, you know, you've said quite rightly there, businesses may not know how to manage a team that is more flexible or more agile. And my question there would be, well, we can put management training in place to help those leaders and the team leaders and the management team do that themselves. Yeah. Or what we are doing is talking to businesses about, well, okay, is the organizational structure that was within your business actually allowing you to offer flexibility? And if it's not, should that be where we start? And we're very much advocating for mutable as an organizational structure, and that's very much where businesses have their core business, but actually everything else is outsourced, and we provide the managed service that plugs all of those different businesses into those business as and when they need it. And if you think about the people who would then work for those service-based companies, they get the flexibility that they need, but by doing a job that they are passionate about, because they'll only be doing the job that they're passionate about. They're not doing what the rest of us are doing, who are PAYE employers for one business, where our time is split into where we're productive, where we're not productive, or, you know, the bit of the job where actually it is our job, and then the other two thirds where it's either stuff that we shouldn't be doing but we tend to get dragged into doing, yeah, or the stuff that's over the table that we shouldn't really be doing either. And I think it is literally just about how you look at your workforce, how do you get your best out of people, and just, you know, look at plug and play approaches to actually making that more manageable. And if you can't do it yourself, knowing that there's businesses out there like ours that will show it how it can be done, but with lots of different solutions in mind, because some people aren't going to be free to, you know, they want that control, they want to do it themselves, they don't want to give it to a managed services provider. So it's how do we give them the tools to do it themselves internally? But it's creating very interesting conversations with businesses. And I think from a job seeker perspective, obviously there's people out there that just want to work a certain day and they may be prescribed hours. And then there's other people that are more like freelancers that want to keep working to outcome and that kind of stuff. And it's about how do we give them the tools and have the conversations with employers out there to start putting jobs out there that are, you know, relevant to the different people and how it is that they're searching. Because I think the only thing you said so far that I would disagree with is that there's a lack of talent. There isn't a lack of talent in this country. They're just not engaging with employers, but that's because employers are not putting their best foot forward.
No, we agree on the same thing. I mean, there's a lack of talent coming into the workforce, you know, because it's just so hard to recruit people for all the reasons that we've just said. Absolutely. I was going to say the funny part of this is that technology has had a huge part to play in this on both sides of the equation. And for those employers that kind of think, flexibility, that's a bit difficult. Actually, they've already implemented flexibility just on their side. And what I mean by that is, with technology, you know, we've all got mobile phones, we've all got email, WhatsApp, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook. I don't know about you, but I get contacted at all times of day and night. You know, I get people sending me messages at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night saying, oh, could you do this for me? Or could you do that for me? Hold on a minute, it's 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. You wouldn't have done that in the past, you know. And likewise, there are a lot of employers that will contact their employees at odd times of the day and night via different methods and expect some kind of response. So, you know, they expect flexibility on one hand, but are they giving it back on the other hand? And trying to manage all of that, I think, is where you guys come in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a few different areas where technology is having its play. Obviously, there's always going to be the conversations about when is it acceptable to be contacting your employees, especially if they're not confined to a 9-to-5, Monday to Friday kind of contract. I think there's the other side of it as well, in terms of a lot of companies are automating, and that creates digital workers against their human workers, yet they're giving their digital workers outcomes to deliver, yet they're not doing that for their human workers, which is why the human workers don't get the flexibility that a digital worker does. We know that automation is going to have such huge impact over the next 10 years in the working world. I think that the latest forecast out of government was about 10 million jobs are going to go due to the amount of processed based work that will end up being automated. So it then brings in questions around you know, early careers, because if we're automating, we're removing those bottom rungs off the ladder for people trying to access work there as well. So it's got, we have to look at technology and the part it plays, because yes, it can help facilitate flexibility, but and when abused, it will impact on mental health, where you feel that you have to respond to your employer in the middle of the night. But there's also other parts of technology that are really going to impact the job space as well, that we also need to be mindful of.
Yeah, absolutely. You make a really good point there as well about automation. By removing lower level jobs from the job marketplace, what do we do about bringing new talent in, you know, at the start point, as on a learning point? You know, if we've done away with the base level jobs, and what do we do next? You know, yeah. And I know I've been involved actually with the new T levels that are rolling out in schools. I think they're a really, really good initiative. It's taken a long while for schools to actually deign to do them, and I do a lot of work in schools, so I know kind of what's got from a careers point of view, and I know how the uptake has been slow, but it's starting to come along. But it's interesting. I just want just before we go, because we kind of coming to the end of our time together, I just want to throw a couple of things at you. There's a big push by a lot of people at the moment to move to a 4-day week, and I'd like your thoughts on that. While you're thinking about that, a personal bugbear of mine is politicians that keep trying to scrap zero-hour contracts without having a clue what a zero-hour contract is and why currently a lot of people like being on them. And also the fact that, of course, 1/3 of all zero-hour contracts are done by students. And if they think a student's going to get a full-time job, then they're fairly deluded. Now, that's not to say that a zero-hour contract is the perfect way forward, but at the moment, it's one of the only forms of flexibility that there is. So I'd just like your views on those controversial things.
They are very controversial, and they're all my triggers as well.
I can see you going, I'm going to punch you in a minute.
But I always think Barbara knows what I'm going to say. So 4-day week, I'm not against a 4-day week. I am against it in isolation, because I think one size fits all solutions don't work.
Exactly.
Because again, you're talking about fair access. 4-day week doesn't work for everyone.
Yeah.
So I think businesses need to, I don't want them to do it as a tick box or just because they're chasing that headline. I think if they do 4-day weeks, it's got to be because their current workers want to do it, but they need to see early doors that's going to massively limit who they can attract to come into that business going forward, because 4-day week doesn't work for everybody. So I would always push businesses more towards outcome, or at least keeping other forms of flexibility on the table rather than doing the one size fits all solutions. The gig economy, I personally think 0-hour contracts are immoral. It doesn't give people the security or stability that they need moving forward. I think outcome-based working, again, giving deliverables and not actually paying people for a piece of work or something that needs to be delivered versus I want you to work X amount of hours every week is the future of work. And I think if anybody's looking at 0-hour contracts because actually they can't provide that, then actually let's just think about what can we provide, because people need job security. People need to know that they've got a guaranteed income, or that at least their food and rations are covered each week, especially with the way universal credit and the benefit system works. If people, you know, if their income's continuously up and down at that, I get what you're saying in terms of the flexibility it provides, but I personally think there's better ways of offering people security in work than doing 0-hour contracts.
Sure. Funnily enough, my partner's on a 0-hour contract and she'd kill you if you tried to take it away. but again, it's proof of your point now, isn't it, Cheney? One size doesn't fit all. You know, for a lot of people, it's not what they want, but they kind of have to do it. For some people, it's definitely what they want and they don't want to change it. You know, so I think your main point it's the perfect point, is stop trying to do one size fits all stuff. Those that want ultimate flexibility of, you know, a few hours here and there work, it works. For those that don't, we need something else, and we need something better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I get your point, and I think it feeds into your whole narrative that, and I think that's the main crux of what you're saying, and I think it's right, is that we need to be flexible in our approach, yeah?
Absolutely, but I just want to say as well, you know, this isn't a light switch movement. This isn't something that's going to change overnight. We know that I've been involved in the flexible working legislation bill and meetings with MPs and other people in this space. They're not going to push any of this through legislatively, so the onus is on business.
Yeah,
and I just think that, you know, it's not a light switching that's going to happen tomorrow. This is a journey we've got to take businesses and the working community on. Absolutely. Over the next sort of 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But I think the move towards outcome-based working, especially as that then feeds into businesses potentially like creating these service-based businesses that plug and play into other companies,
yeah.
I think that is the future. You know, we're already seeing a move in that direction from businesses in terms of that organisational structure.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree more. We don't need government legislation to make this happen, because that will just become another blooming tick box exercise. What we need is a buy-in. We need a buy-in from employers and a buy-in from employees that says, okay, let's work out what suits us.
Mm-hmm.
Let's work Absolutely. Out what works for us as an organisation, both as an employer and as a group of employees. Yeah. And yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Listen, it's been fascinating talking to you. I love what you're doing. I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, we need to think about our workplace. You know, we left the 20th century a long time ago, but we still offer 20th century solutions to most working places. And I just can't see the future of that at all. It's just, you know, it's limiting in every single way. So it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Give us a shout out for your website so that our listeners can come along and find out more about Find Your Flex.
So if you're a job seeker, you can come to findyourflex.co.uk. There's loads of hints, tips and tools there to help you find more flexible working, and some fantastic employers on there. If you are a business who are looking to find your internal flexibility as well as external flexibility, then come to findyourflex.business.
Fantastic. Chaney, Barbara, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Monkey Show. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Stay safe, and we'll see you all again soon.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
The Business Bunker
with Paul Andrews.
Chaney Hamilton and Barbara Ford there of Find Your Flex. A fantastic interview. The big points for me that came out of that is that one size doesn't fit all, and we have to start to get more flexible about what we do. And it's a great way of attracting talent. And one of the things that we suffer from at the moment is an inability to get enough talent into our businesses.
Or even find staff.
Yep.
I know so many businesses, and that's the first thing they always say when I interview them.
It's difficult, yeah.
Yeah, they just cannot find staff.
Well, and that's why they need to change. They need to change their approach to how you employ people.
Flexi.
And you need to be flexible. Exactly. And you need to, you know, give people the tools to be able to work for you.
You know that lovely man that brings in biscuits and cakes and things from Tenterden?
Mm-hmm.
So they are saying, it's Tenterden Chamber, they're saying, hi, Jules and Paul, with you second. How about a shout out for today's sponsor preparing for a chamber committee meeting this evening? Lots to discuss, and these little hashtags, a local business, of course. So have a good meeting, and I wonder what's on the agenda.
Oh, I don't know, but they tend to go on. They do consume a bit of ale as well while they're doing it, I think. Yeah.
And the lovely Athelbray, the lovely Athelbray Limited, they're award-winning training and coaches. They work in partnership with you to develop your staff. And the team is Keith, Kate, Fran, and there's a load of others that I don't know yet. And they support all sectors in all regions of the UK. So they've just joined us for the last half hour. And their website is athelbrae.co.uk. Have a look.
Fantastic. Business Awards 2022. Applications now open for the Ashford, Canterbury, Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells Area Business Awards. Each of them has the following categories: customer service, innovation, startup, that's for a business less than 3 years old, a small business, businesswoman of the year, best family business and best construction business. If you want to find out all about it or enter your business for one of those awards, www.businessawardskent.co.uk.
and drivers fear being priced out of town centres by rising parking charges. This is coming up weekly, Paul yep. Andrews. And changes to public transport as well, the AA is warning. So as town centre trade attempts to recover from the pandemic, the Motoring Association, the AA, is cautioning against councils increasing parking fees as part of attempts to balance their books this year, along with chasing dogs.
Mm-hmm.
With local authorities working hard to set up their budgets for the upcoming financial year, the AA says it's concerned that, in speech marks, aggressive hikes in parking fees and public transport fares will simply choke off much-needed local trade in high streets by making life considerably more expensive for drivers at a time when the cost of living is on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
Again and again.
Yeah, and also, you know, some of the answers that you get from local councils about this kind of thing on car parking, they start pointing you at Park and Ride. And the problem with that is Maidstone, Ashford, I think, but I'm not sure, but definitely Maidstone and Canterbury, their Park and Rides are coming to an end.
Yeah, the Sturry one.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether I've misread that because I only read it quickly, but they said it hasn't been used in the last year. Well, of course it hasn't, because no. We were on blooming lockdowns and things.
Absolutely.
And people were working from home.
But of course the Park and Rides aren't run by councils, they're run by the bus companies. And the bus company, you know, the cost of fuel is going through the roof. They can't afford to run these services.
I read that it costs the ratepayer $2,000 per user. $2,000, is that a year per user?
No idea. Don't know.
I need to look it all up. But, you know, of course, there's lots of students that are coming to Canterbury from Thanet and areas that too. I was reading some of their comments. I mean, they rely on that Park and Ride. They can't afford to.
It's gone.
You know.
It's gone. They can't rely on it anymore. Right, do you know what I'm going to do now?
Oh, you're going to do your uninterrupted
the
FSB.
The uninterrupted FSB news.
Good.
The Federation of Small Businesses News Roundup. Offering advice and guidance for small businesses and the self-employed.
There's an FSB Kent member showcase at McNaid's in Faversham on Friday the 18th of March, 12:30pm to 2pm. This is an in-person business discussion and networking for FSB members in Kent and Medway. Stefano Cuomo from McNaid will give a short talk about the McNaid business journey, providing key business tips and tricks for those just beginning their journey or long-established businesses. There'll be plenty of time for networking and sampling some of McNaid's excellent produce. See, I couldn't go to that, because if I went to that, I'd end up buying our the shop.
Yeah, why not? That's the idea.
I was over there the other day at a meeting, and I came out and I thought, do you know what, I've got to go and get a trolley, haven't I? I've got to go and fill this up.
There's no nicer way to shop, Paul.
Yeah, it's lovely.
I'm hopping into the good shed on my way home to get some lovely hake.
You buy hake every week, don't you? Buy anything different?
Yeah, I do, but hake's really nice and it's just easy to pan fry, and I put lots of spices on it and stuff.
Okay.
Could be anything.
Your mum didn't like the last one,
right? No, she didn't.
No, she didn't. No. It wasn't nice.
No.
Right, I'm going to tell you about loads of events that the FSB are doing, and then at the end of it, I'm going to give you a link where you can find out more and book your places.
And now, shall I interrupt or not?
No, don't interrupt. Okay. Whatever you do, don't interrupt.
Okay.
Now, the dates are all over the place. I haven't got them in order, so do bear with me on this. Tomorrow, manana, Wednesday the 23rd of February, net zero conversation. Let's talk about the transition to electric vehicles for SMEs. This is taking place tomorrow, Wednesday the 23rd of February, 11 a.m. to 12 noon. On Monday the 28th, also on Wednesday the 23rd, manana, Kent Virtual Networking, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Join us for this Kent-based relaxing networking event with like-minded business owners, and everyone is welcome. On Monday the 28th of February, maximise your membership, 12:30 to 1:30. Now more than ever is the time to make sure you're making the most of the FSB benefits, whether it's exploring the legal hub and updating your processes, or understanding what FSB Care could be doing for your well-being and all the other things that the FSB offers its members. So that's Monday the 28th of February at 12:30. Is Your Business Dementia Friendly is taking place on Thursday the 24th of February, 11 a.m. This is an online event. All these events are online, by the way, unless otherwise stated. And it's led by the Bristol Dementia Action Alliance, Tony Hall from that organisation. That's Thursday the 24th of February. There's International Women's Day 2022, Breaking the Bias, on Tuesday the 8th of March at 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon. Join us on International Women's Day as we celebrate phenomenal women that have helped to break the bias and lead the way for more women in enterprise. Tuesday the 8th of March. On Thursday the 10th of March, property and construction event, health and safety responsibilities for developers and contractors, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Hosted by Peter Searle. That's Thursday the 10th of March. On Wednesday the 2nd of March, 11:45 a.m. to 1 p.m. is Southeast England Virtual Networking. Wednesday the 16th of March, 10 a.m. Access to Finance in the Southeast. And then Thursday the 10th of March, 11 a.m, Southeast Women in Enterprise Virtual Networking. On the same day, Thursday the 10th of March, 11 a.m. till 12, the Busy Persons Toolkit. If you want some tips, hints and techniques to help you cope with the stresses and strains of running your business, join business owner Sharon Critchlow and Nikki Marshall to discover your bounce. That's Thursday the 10th of March. Wednesday the 30th of March, what to do if running your business feels hard. Blimey. 11 a.m. to 12, join FSB and Inspirational Coach Jim Hughes for this unmissable virtual webinar where you will hear what to do if running your business feels hard. So do look at that. The 18th of March, Friday the 18th of March, oh, I've just done this one, is the FSB Kent Member Showcase at McNaid's. So all of those events can be found by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB, where you will find a complete rolling list of events that are happening, which is updated weekly. And you can find out more about each of those events and book your free tickets.
Fabulous and beautiful.
Hold on.
Can I not interrupt?
You can't interrupt because I've got one more thing to read.
Go on then. Get it off your chest.
Yeah. The FSB has launched Making Tax Digital app. We've partnered with Rhino Software, whose HMRC recognised app is designed to help you follow new Making Tax Digital rules, record your expenses, create invoices and submit your VAT returns directly to HMRC in the FSB Making Tax Digital app. Details and download if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/MTD-app. Okay, you can interrupt now.
Well, we've had a lovely tweet from the Athelbrey team, as I mentioned earlier. Mm. And they say, hello, Villanueva.
Hello.
Using the Bee Bunker hashtag. They've actually put just bunker without the bee, but we'll let them off. They say there's a great walking networking event, which is organised by Katrina at Thackeray Williams.
Oh, yeah.
And it's this Friday, and it's at the Knoll. You know the Knoll?
Sevenoaks.
Yeah, it's one of the country's most exceptional historic houses, containing world-class collections and surrounded by a 1,000-acre deer park.
Mm.
So I'd love to go there. I do love a haunch of venison.
Have you not been there?
No, you've never taken me.
Why not?
But I do love a haunch of venison, as you know.
Mm.
It's my one weakness. They say bring your dog. So
well, I don't think you can eat the deer.
No, probably not.
I think they're still running around.
Maybe.
Mind you, the deer spend a lot of time avoiding golf balls there.
Do they?
Yeah, because there's a golf course through it as well.
They say bring your dog and check out February networking with Sevenoaks Chamber of Commerce. So there is a little website there. So I'm sure Paul would diligently put that on the Business Bunker website.
Absolutely.
Go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk and we will put that up after the show.
Yeah. Tracy Ferguson has said, great passion behind the team at Find Your Flex. Absolutely. She says, yes, definitely one size doesn't fit all. A flexible approach attracts so much more talent into the workplace. Really, really love the interview. Yeah, thank you, Tracy. They were brilliant, weren't they? And as you say, very passionate.
Sorry, somebody's talking about fire pits. My timeline is going mad about fire pits at the moment.
About what?
Fire pits. Because
one of my
friends said he's just getting a garden, and he said he can't wait. He's got a son. He's going to have a paddling pool and a sand pit, and they're going to have a fire pit. And then somebody on
to heat the pool? They're going to have a fire pit under the swimming pool.
Probably they'll need it. There won't be any gas. But somebody's telling him off because of the planet that he can't have a fire pit. So sorry. There's a Rise Up festival which I'm interested in. It's presented by Rock Soba. It's on the Friday the 27th and the 28th and the Sunday the 29th of May at Headcorn Aerodrome in Kent.
Mm.
And it's it will be the first and the largest of its kind in the UK, offering music lovers and a truly unique and memorable experience. And they've got Supergrass headlining. saw them in my days at the Penny Theatre when I was doing their PR. Great band. And the Queen's Symphonic plus Iconic Place Your Hands. I don't know what that is. Queen Symphonic plus Iconic Place Your Hands band. They've got Reef, Peter Hook. I can't remember who he is, but I know he's good. And The Light, don't know who they are. Glenn Matlock, know him, Sex Pistols. And The Primitives, with more to be announced. You'd like The Primitives, Paul. Three stages, they're going to host a variety of artists with headliners each day. Loads of other bands, Coco and the Butterfields, Milky, Viridian, and Old Time Sailors. That sounds like more of your sort of thing, Paul. Other special guests. And so you can go to the riseupfestival.com. Tickets go on sale from Thursday the 17th of February, so this week.
Right.
There you go.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's at the Headcorn Airdrome.
Yeah.
Cool.
Some good bands.
Absolutely. A leading manufacturer of electric bikes in the county have unveiled their latest range, pedal cycles with a full throttle. It means users can be fully propelled by the motor rather than having to pedal. That's not a bike at all, then, is it? It's a moped.
Don't get me started.
It's not a bike at all, is it? You've got no pedals.
I tell you, when I was last Tuesday when I went home, there were these two people, students on electric scooters, going down the main road, and they swerve out to avoid parked cars. They don't look over their shoulder, and I'm like, you know, just careering all over the road.
Have you seen the TikTok on Twitter?
I'm not on TikTok.
No, it's a TikTok someone's posted on Twitter.
Okay.
It's obviously stage managed, but it is funny. And by the look of it, they're in Amsterdam.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's a motorist and a cyclist. And a cyclist has crossed in front of the motorist at the last minute. And the motorist has braked hard. And the cyclist has banged his bonnet. The motorist gets out, punches him in the face, picks him up and throws him in the canal.
Well, I kind of know where they're going.
Yeah. It's clearly stage managed because, you know, the camera angles are too good for it to just be someone caught it by accident.
When I was in Holland, we did a conference there a couple of years back before the pandemic. And I really wanted to go on a bike, but they know what they're doing out there. I didn't know in Amsterdam. They just, you've been to Amsterdam, they just hoard down the bikes and they just know where they're going and they have total, complete right of way. And
the one that wasn't stage managed, which... you shouldn't laugh at, really. You know, the government came up with this absolutely crackpot plan of allowing cyclists to cycle in the middle of the road.
Yeah. It's mad.
Well, somebody with a webcam in their car was following a cyclist who was deliberately cycling in this middle of the road. Hogging. So he couldn't get past either way.
Yeah.
And the cyclist kept looking behind and laughing. Yeah, because he was doing it. So he followed him for ages and ages and ages, all on webcam. And then all of a sudden, the cyclist, I don't know what he did, but he lost control of the bike and he hit the curb and he went over the handlebars and landed on his face. And unfortunately, everybody just fell about laughing because it was real karma that, you know, he'd done this.
Jeremy Vine.
Well, Jeremy Vine, who got very upset about this, then fell off his penny farthing the next day, didn't he?
Well, and blacked his eyes. Jeremy Vine was the one that was saying that the unvaccinated were hogging hospital beds. Nothing to do with men on on penny farthings. I don't know how he follows me. I don't know how, because I'm always very, really rude about him.
Yeah.
I don't think he reads his tweets. But yeah, the penny farthing episode was quite funny.
Mm-hmm.
But electric bikes, because it would be us, the motorists, that would be in trouble if you knock somebody off. But they shouldn't be on the road.
Well, one of the things that interests me, I mean, this goes at 15 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Now, it's counted as a bicycle, so you don't need any of the normal things you have. But if I let anyone out on that, I'd want insurance, yeah?
And a helmet.
Because you could do some serious damage with one of those.
Yeah, of course.
Even at 15 miles an hour, you could hurt someone.
Yeah.
And they'd be perfectly entitled to come after you.
I think this is why Canterbury City Council are going after dogs, because they want dogs on leads on the promenade because of the bikes. That's what it is.
Yeah.
There's a lovely, relaxed, professional marsh networking, which we love. It's Thursday the 24th of February. It's at the Ship Inn in Dimchurch. It was a great pub. The the website to go to have a look at that and book is marshnetwork.co.uk. And there is a phone number, which is 07749159263. And yeah, the shipping is a great pub, so go along. And it's Thursday, 24th of February, with Terry Botty and Botfield Associates.
Fantastic. I'm going to do this again. We covered this last week, but I'm really keen on this, and you know I'm a big fan of nuclear power, and I just want to see it happen. Discussions to potentially install a new nuclear technology on Romney Marsh have begun. It comes 8 months after the announcement that the Dungeness PB power plant will move into the defueling stage. That's 7 years ahead of schedule. Although it will take many years for the site to be shut down completely, it eventually lead to the loss of jobs. 900, in fact. Neighbouring site Dungeness A was decommissioned in 2006. MP for the Marsh, Damien Collins, has previously championed the idea of installing an SMR, that's a small modular reactor. He says due to the existing grid connections, this would suit the location such as a Marsh. Unlike a traditional power station, SMRs, which are powered by nuclear energy to generate electricity, are constructed off-site in a factory and then assembled at the location. So they're vastly cheaper. And each, it's not in the email, I happen to know, I used to work in the nuclear industry many years ago. Each SMR will power about 1 million homes. So it's a great place to put it because there's already a nuclear installation there and it's wired to the grid. And just while we're talking about it, they've just commissioned the second fusion reactor, which is incredibly exciting because everybody said we'd never do fusion technology. And they've just opened what's called a step reactor in Nottingham. A step reactor is a spherical tokamak energy production
unit.
You are a bit of a boffin on all of this, but we do need to be a little bit more self-sufficient here, don't we?
Well, with the news that's going on...
with Putin.
With Mr. Putin and his invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah,
and
he said he was withdrawing about 3 days ago.
Yeah, no, they're doing the okie-cokie at the moment, aren't they? This morning, the German Chancellor, Herr Scholz, has issued an edict basically delegitimizing the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. So they're saying that Germany won't take the gas anymore, which is laudable but suicidal because they've got no energy. And energy in Europe, the continent, not the EU, but in the continent of Europe, are highly dependent on Russian gas and oil. And we shouldn't be.
Weren't we supposed to be hooking up with Norway a while back?
Yeah, you know, we consume a lot of energy and you have to produce energy. And one of the daft things we've done in this country is we haven't built any nuclear, not really, for a long, long time. We don't do any fracking, which we should do for gas. There's enough gas under the land in the UK to supply the entire United Kingdom's gas needs for the next 200 years. And we don't extract any
of it. Is
that
in the North Sea?
No, it's on land.
Yeah, but haven't we got some?
And we've got stuff
some?
In the North Sea as well. And we've got coal. The whole bloody country's built on a bed of coal. The problem is people don't want to use it because of the carbon implications, but then we import it from somewhere else, which is just bonkers.
I know. Did I read out Tracy's? I know we read out a couple of Tracy's, but did we read out her one about enjoying the interview with Jill? So much beautiful fresh produce on our doorstep and the taste of fruit in particular, I think, which is in season, is just divine. I agree. It hasn't been tainted by the processes used to keep them looking palatable and fresh. And I don't think I read that, did I?
You didn't. And it's a very good point, isn't it? That it's one of those things that we've kind of got used to as a society. That unless we have perfectly round apples and bananas that have the right curvature, and the dear old EU tried that one for a little while, didn't they?
I love our American friends, but you go to America and eat an apple, just no flavour at all, and you come here and you eat our beautiful apples.
Local and seasonal is the way to go, and we've got out of the habit of eating the seasons or even understanding the seasons again.
Yeah,
unless you bring your kids up
24/7 to do kind it. Of. I want it and I want it now.
Yeah.
There's nothing. There's so few bits of the season. Probably one of the only things that's left that people really look forward to now is things like the asparagus season, which has got a really true and very short season.
Yeah.
And you know, it's everything else has pretty much had its life, and even that they're trying to extend a little bit. So.
Sure, you know, and it's a difficult balance, isn't it? How do you feed a population with things that they want, and then try and do it organically without using chemicals to, or you know, preservatives to preserve stuff? It's really difficult.
We're almost there. I think we're about 11. I think they've now got the storage up to about 11 months on Kent apples, so we are getting to the point where we potentially could have a 12-month.
I only ever have Kent apples from Riverford. In their box, they're nearly always Kent for most of the thing from Paul Ward. There's Terry Thorpe has just chirped up again. Hello. He says cyclists need to be insured. He's talking about the electric bikes and things. Need to be insured. Every mode of transport should be treated the same. Absolutely, Tezza, we agree.
I totally agree. You know, I mean, just as someone that, if I was riding it, I'd want insurance in case, you know, I knock someone over. I mean, at 15 miles an hour on a piece of metal, you could seriously damage someone. And I'm not a great one for incurring costs or, you know, putting legal restrictions in people's way, but you've got to be sensible about this as well. Get insured. If you've got an electric bike, I suggest you get insured. There's nothing stopping you doing it yourself. Yeah, you don't have to wait for the government to tell you to do it.
Dover-based ferry operator DFDS is looking to recruit more than 100 new crew to work on its Dover to Dunkirk ships. Oh, I'd like that job. The company is recruiting stewards and stewardesses. Don't say that anymore, do you? Just stewards. And chefs.
Cabin staff.
Cabin staff. And chefs for weekend, walk-on, walk-off, part-time, temporary and longer-term roles. They're all offering flexible shift patterns, so there's no link there to know how to do it, but I guess you just Google DFDS Dover.
What if you want one of the jobs?
Cabin staff.
Jobsinkent.com.
Oh, is it on there?
Yeah,
I see what you did there. And also, just as we come near to the end, we've got the full fibre internet service provider, Truly, which
Truly,
is always outside my house, has appointed a new chief operating officer. It's based in Kings Hill, actually, the firm, and they've promoted Brian O'Neill into the position. Well done, Brian. He was formerly the company's operations director, and he'll be reporting directly to Chief Executive Andy Conybeare. So they are currently providing full fibre access to 170,000 premises and aims to reach 400,000 by the end of the year and at least 1 million by 2024.
Absolutely. And that neatly brings to the end of another Business Bunker show. I want to say a huge thank you to our fantastic guest this week, the lovely Jill Sargent from Producing Kent, Cheney Hamilton and Barbara Ford.
With their flexi.
I beg your pardon?
With their flexi. Working thing, flexi. That's what they are.
I thought you were going to tell us who they were.
No, you know them so much.
No, because you've just interrupted now, haven't you, and made it all difficult.
If you got in a flat, Paul Andrews.
No. It's find your flex.
I knew that with a little underscore.
If you're looking at their Twitter handle, yeah. So Cheney Hamilton and Barbara Ford, find your flex. Thank you so much to my stonkingly gorgeous co-host Jill Sirkin. We'll be back for another show next week, and a huge thank you to this week's show sponsors, the lovely folks at Tenterton Chamber,
and for tweeting in.
Yeah, bye for now.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.